If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 228 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Oh, me, not much. Been raining all day, so no baseball here tonight in Greenville. But it was nice. It was like 75. It did not feel like summer at all here. Yeah, otherwise, it's been just grinding on baseball stuff, man, and going to the ballpark and all that good stuff. So, final stretch is here, and it's time to hit the ground running at this point. So, hopefully, we're here to help you get the edge on prospects and take you to the finish line for your leagues.
Yeah, it's been actually really nice here in Maine the last handful of days, finally. Yeah, but like in the morning, it's like dropped back down to like the mid to upper 50s. So, like, walk outside to bring my kids to camp, and I'm like, all right, this feels a little bit like fall now, but hopefully we don't jump straight from hot, humid, sticky, gross to fall, though. I'm starting to really love fall. I was joking the other day. I was like, if we keep getting these like humid, disgusting summers here in Maine, like I'm going to change my favorite season from summer to fall. Like it's always been summer. Obviously, you know, summer's great. My birthday's in the summer. My birthday's in July. So I'm like, I've always loved summer, but I'm like, man, fall is starting to look more and more appealing as I get older, and we get these humid summer that you guys are used to, but like we're not. And like, I don't like it. So, but it makes it a little sticky at the ballpark. But
yeah,
hopefully this nice, you know, it's been like 70s during the day. Like humidity's kind of broke, which is great. So it makes it a little more comfortable at the ballpark, which is awesome. But yeah, trade deadline has come and gone. It was, you know, what were your overall thoughts of the trade deadline? Just like as a whole, like you know, kind of like we were, felt like we were gaining steam. Like they had some nice deals a couple days before it, earlier in the day on trade deadline day on Tuesday. Then like the end of it just kind of like fizzled out. Like there was no like late minute, you know, blockbusters. So yeah, overall, I'll give this year's trade deadline a C+, maybe a B- if I'm feeling generous. So I was kind of underwhelmed overall, but still we had a lot of good prospects on the move here though.
It was fine at best. It was
it was fine.
I mean, I don't know.
What is that from? It was fine. What is that from? That's from a movie.
Yeah, I have no idea.
That's going to annoy me. I'll think of it later in the show.
Yeah, you'll pop out with it as you remember it. But I don't know. I mean, it was a little underwhelming. You know, some teams that I thought could make big moves. Like, the big moves just weren't big moves per se. Like, it was, you know, deals like Jack Flaherty. Like, I wanted the Orioles to make a big splash and go get, like, Dylan Cease, not Jack Flaherty. Or, like, you wanted the Mariners to make a big move. Or, you know, the Rangers did their thing. But overall, I feel like it was just a little bit underwhelming. I mean, the Mets sold off. Like, that was, I guess, a little interesting. But at the end of the day, like, I was a little disappointed with it. I thought it could have gone a little bit better. But it is what it is. So,
yeah, who thought that the Mets were going to be sellers this year and the Cardinals? You know, the White Sox, even though there's a lot of talent, I think people probably saw that one coming from a mile away. But it was also weird that the Red Sox and Yankees both, like, extremely quiet this deadline. Like, I'm not used to them both being quiet. Usually both of them are involved in some way, or at least in rumors. There was not even any rumors. I mean, the Yankees went out and got, Middleton for the pen. Sox went out and got Luis Urias and then optioned right to AAA Worcester for some reason. But, yeah, kind of an odd trade deadline. But still got a lot of good prospects on the move here. That's the topic of today's show. We'll break down one of the top names that changed teams over the last, you know, 7 days or so. But before we do the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Shows at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty prospect and FYPD rankings, plus daily write-ups, private Discords, and much more. All right, Chris, let's start with, I think we both agree that the biggest name, or at least the highest name in our rankings to be moved at the deadline, was Kyle Manzardo in a little bit of a surprising move here. I mean, I'm not surprised Tampa Bay went out and got an arm, but was surprised that they gave up Kyle Manzardo to go grab Aaron Savali, who they absolutely need, especially after McClanahan going on the IL today. What were your thoughts on that deal? What are your thoughts on, you know, Manzardo in Cleveland? Do you think his long-term outlook has changed, or more so his ETA? I mean, after Bell also getting traded away to Miami, and then the, you know, side tightness that Naylor's been dealing with, looks like we might see Manzardo, you know, sooner rather than later. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it was a good deal. Like, it made sense for Cleveland to do, I think, but given the fact that they just have so many arms, you know, they had just a surplus and they were able to make this move. And so, you know, it was a bit surprising. Like, I figured they'd go like a bigger splash move, like a Bieber type, but you know, Savali's been really, really good.
Yeah.
And you look at ultimately what Manzardo can do, like, in my opinion, he was easily the best player moved at the best prospect moved at the deadline. If you look at it, like we are just from a prospect standpoint, but Manzardo, man, it's just an easy year to give him a pass given what he is going through this year.
Yep.
And not to get into explicit details, but you may have seen and or heard, but there's a lot going on at home with Manzardo, and I'm not surprised. It's hard to go play baseball at a high level and deal with extremely hard things. Everybody wants to just kind of crap on him. I've seen a lot of just crap on Twitter. But at the end of the day, like, Manzardo is going to be fine. His metrics are actually better this year. All the underlying data is better than it was last year. So
that's encouraging to me. First and foremost is that he's made improvements, and you look at the batted ball data and he's hitting the ball much harder than he was last year. You know, the plate discipline, the contact skills have taken a bit of a step back, but at the end of the day, you're still looking at an 88% zone contact rate, which is easily plus or better. And he has a 79% overall contact rate. Doesn't chase a ton. He's at 24% chase. And like I said, hitting the ball harder than ever. So yeah, I'm not sure when we see him. Like that'd be my biggest question. I'm not sure he debuts this year, at least makes a fantasy impact. Like I could see him coming up later in the year, but I don't think they're going to push him. It just given all the circumstances and given what he's done this year, I think he needs to continue in AAA, and that'll probably be the case if I had to guess. I don't think he makes much of a major league impact in 2023. I would say next year, absolutely, but this year, not so much.
Yeah, it's really hard to say this year, given, you know, obviously they just acquired him and what's going on, you know, outside of baseball with him. So, yeah, but long term, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm still as high today as I was, you know, a year ago on Kyle Manzardo. And yeah, the overall surface stats are not great. He's hitting 238 this year. All right. You know, if you can use that to, you know, get him for, you know, 90 cents on the dollar or whatever the discount may be in your league, I absolutely would do so. Like Chris mentioned, the metrics are still really good. The approach is still really good. Yeah, he didn't go gangbusters this year, but it's who would with what's going on outside of baseball. So 100% buy low on Manzardo. Shifting over to all the prospects the Mets got while trading away Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer to Houston and Texas, respectively. Got back Luis Angel Acuna in the Scherzer deal, and then got back Drew Gilbert and Ryan fringe prospect Clifford, as Bob Nightingale called him in the deal there. That what started there. That was a phenomenal haul. Getting like when we saw Gilbert first, I'm like, all right, you know, pretty solid return. Then you're like, wait a minute, Ryan Clifford's in this as well. I mean, I have Clifford as a top 50 prospect now. I mean, I think he's definitely in that discussion. Power has always been kind of prominent with Ryan Clifford, and I think he's proving to be, you know, making strides at the plate this year just as a pure hitter as well. And he cranked his first home run in the Mets org tonight. So for High A Brooklyn, getting off on a good foot there. I'm a big fan of Clifford, and I think Gilbert's pretty appropriately ranked and valued right now. But I think the perceived value for a guy like Ryan Clifford is still, you know, it's still playing a little catch up here. So I'd go out and try to get him wherever possible. I mean, is he gonna be a stud? Maybe not, but doesn't run a lot, and you know, isn't, you know, more than maybe an average, you know, hit to a guy, but you know, 50 hit, 60 power, that's gonna be still a pretty good prospect there, and a guy that's still pretty undervalued in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I like Clifford. Everybody's kind of going berserk over him now that he's with the Mets, and I think that it could create a decent sell high opportunity. Again, I like the profile. I think he does some things well. He didn't overly impress me when I saw him for three games a couple of weeks ago. He's just like fine, solid. I think he's a top 100 guy. I think there's decent contact and power there, but ultimately I'm afraid the glove kind of limits him a bit. And while I like Clifford, I think this is a good time to actually cash out and sell, because everybody's like, oh, he's taking Pete Alonso's spot when they get rid of him. Like, those things are just like you shouldn't even utter those words in a sentence, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a bit crazy.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, at this point, like, they think that Alonso's good as gone and Clifford can just step in and replace him. And I just don't see that. I mean, you look at what Pete Alonso's done. Pete Alonso is a star. I mean, averaging over 40 home runs a year over the last four seasons. Like, it's just everything that you want. And people are like, oh, Clifford's going to be that guy. So I think that in Dynasty, Clifford is becoming a bit of a sell because of the surrounding hype of going to the Mets and people talking about him in that way. And so I like him. He has good contact skills. Like I said, he has good power. I'd say he's above average contact, above average power. And if all clicks right, you know, he could be a middle of the order bat, but there is some questions about his glove, and he's very limited in the field, and so there's a lot of pressure on his bat at this point.
Yeah, that is for sure. So you're more on the sell high camp. All right. So where do you? So you said you have a top 100. Where do you have him in your overall rankings?
Let me see. I can tell you in 2 seconds. So I have Clifford 89 in my prospect rankings.
Okay. And let's see, where do I have him exactly? I was saying top 50. See, that's the thing. I'm just a little bit higher on the bat, obviously, than you are. But we both like him. I have him right up 52 right now. He's kind of in a cluster with Owen Casey, who's actually, he's a few spots ahead of Clifford. You know, see, there's not a lot of hitters in this range. Actually, this is where I have a big cluster of pitchers. But yeah, I think definitely a solid bat there, good power. I want to see how he transitions to this Mets org. And then Luis Angel Acuna, you know, I think is pretty underrated as well. I mean, once people get past the fact that he's not Ronald, no, he's never going to be Ronald. You know, there's good speed here. You know, this is a plus or better speed player with a high efficiency on the bases. He's been successful in over 80% of his stolen base attempts in the minor leagues. You know, solid contact skills as well. Could be like a 270, 275 type of hitter. And I think there's, you know, there's sneaky pull side pop. And, you know, I saw that in the batting practice before the Fall Stars game last year out in the AFL. He was just really hitting some tanks out there to left field when he was making security guards run. So obviously, is he going to be like a 20 homer guy? No. But could he be like, you know, 14, 15, 16 at peak? Yeah, I think he could, to go along with decent average and, you know, potential for 30 plus steals and see where he ends up. Because while I think he's a slightly less blocked with the Mets than he was in Texas, I mean, they still got Lindor signed long term. You know, McNeil's still there for the next few years. You know, running Mauricio obviously is still in the picture as well. So kind of still want to see where he ends up. My guess would be second, and maybe McNeil, you know, back to the outfield, and still don't know what to do with Mauricio. Maybe they trade him or Beatty this offseason. I don't know. But I like Acuna a lot, and I think he's pretty undervalued. But where do you have Acuna? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you there. I like Acuna. For me, I have him right around 50 overall. He slots in just behind Drew Gilbert. So Gilbert, for me, is the highest-ranked prospect that they acquired. But Acuna, just right around that range of being one of the best prospects in the Mets system now, where he does a lot of things well. I mean, obviously, you look at him, he looks a lot like his brother in the box. And a little bit undersized. He's a great athlete, though. He's very aggressive hitter, hard swings, takes a big hacks. Like you said, it translates in batting practice. We've seen him hit some big bombs, and the power hasn't quite come in games, but it's there. I mean, he's got bat speed. He's got really quick hands. He's a plus runner with ease, and he's really, really good in the field. He's an easy plus shortstop. He honestly, that's what impressed me the most about him. When I've seen him live, is his glove more than his bat. So, you know, that definitely could stick in the middle infield. You know, Lindor's around for the foreseeable future, but Acuna could certainly play shortstop and take that from him, I think. And the bat's good. So for fantasy, like, I'm tempering my expectations a little bit because of the aggressiveness, because I do believe that he could kind of get eaten up a bit as he moves up just because he's just swing happy. But there are really solid skills here across the board. And I would say for me, he's the second best player or the third best player overall traded at the deadline behind Manzardo and Gilbert.
Yeah, he's right in that cluster. I have him and Gilbert very close in my rankings. Where do you have Mauricio now, too? You still have him ahead of Acuna, I'm assuming?
I do, yeah. He's about a tier ahead, and Gilbert and Acuna in the next tier. But like I said, it's becoming a little closer.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And even Mauricio, he's kind of been not terrible over the last 2 months, but definitely slowed a good amount from his early season torrid pace that he was on. But yeah, the Mets, I think the Mets did well. I mean, I know Mets fans aren't going to like that this is where they are. Then you probably heard the Max Scherzer comment about what he was told about how they're not going to be trying to compete till 2025. So I know the Mets aren't going to like where they are now, or at least Mets fans aren't, but these are some good prospects they got back for two guys with a combined age of, what, 80, something like that. I think Scherzer's like 39 and Verlander's 41 or something like that. Obviously, they still got some left in the tank, and I think those are good gets for Texas and Houston as well, as they kind of stripped their rotations for the postseason. But good prospects going to the Mets for sure. All right. Oh, one more. I forgot we had one more prospect going to the New York Mets, and that's Marco Vargas, who was traded, you know, a few days before the deadline. I went in the David Robertson deal, but you know, don't sleep on Marco Vargas either. I think this is a guy that has shown a very good approach in the low minors. I think the the hit tool, contact skills are definitely pretty impressive and could lead to some high averages and high OBPs. Where the, you know, power and speed ultimately ends up, I think, is the question mark there. He doesn't project like super high in either. Maybe he's, you know, fringe average to average in both. But this is a prospect that to get in on now, because if he does start, you know, adding a little bit of bulk, tapping into a little bit more power, like this could be a guy that takes off prospect rankings. And he's already kind of steadily on the rise as well. So kind of like a sneaky good target for dynasty leagues.
He's been pretty buzzy on Twitter. A lot of hype around him. He's interesting. He's very a disciplined hitter. He doesn't chase hardly anything out of the zone. He makes solid contact. The power, I guess, is kind of the question of, like, you know, what kind of player can Marco Vargas become? And I think that will really hinge on his power development and growth there. So, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty split on how he feels. Like, I've seen people say, like, oh, he's a top 50 prospect. And, you know, I'm not going anywhere near there personally. But, you know, he has the capabilities, but there's a lot of guys like this that perform and put up these kind of numbers in the lower levels of the minors, especially in rookie ball. When you're looking at especially the low chase rates and the solid contact rates, I mean, you're facing such poor pitching and pitchers that can't command the ball at all. So if you're semi-disciplined at all, like, the results are going to kind of show there. So, yeah, for me, I want to see a bit more power. I get it. He's young. There's a little bit of room to grow in his frame. He just turned 18. He's at the complex. So, like, the age to level stuff is certainly encouraging. But, you know, you look, the EVs are fine. I mean, he's got an 88-mile-an-hour average EV and around 101-mile-an-hour 90th percentile EV, which are both, you know, a tick below average. The 90th percentile is below average, but again, an 18-year-old. So, he could go either way there. So I like him. I do think he's a decent buy, but there's some just kind of insane buzz about him on Twitter that I'm not there.
Yeah, no, I'm not there either. I think I had him, you know, definitely not 50 range. Maybe I think he was probably 250 range. Let's see. Where do I bump him to? Nope, wrong. How many Marcos are on my sheet? Jeez, more Marcos than I thought. Yeah, I have him 258 right now. So
yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of other guys kind of similar to him in that range that I'm like, all right, you know, they've shown enough to bump up my list. But yeah, I'm not going to go too crazy on a guy like Marco Vargas yet. I mean, it's not like he's got like this, you know, huge power speed blend where you're like, oh, this guy could be like top 25 soon. Like, I don't think he has that upside ever. So yeah, definitely. Yeah, if that's the price, yeah, definitely I'm not in on that at all. But, you know, top 250, I think pretty fair for Marco Vargas. Moving over to a couple Seattle or new Seattle prospects, I should say. The Mariners acquired Dominic Canzone, Ryan Bliss, and also Josh Rojas, all for just Paul Sewald. I mean, good for, I was talking with Welsh about this on Prospect One earlier this week, and I was like, you know, and he's obviously out there in Arizona. He's like, all right, good for them getting their reliever, but damn, that was a lot to give up for Paul Sewald. And I like, you know, Canzone a lot. I mean, he just doesn't seem to get as much love as he thought should. And he even fell. I think I got him in like the 13th, 14th round, 12th, 13th, 14th round, something like that in our midseason prospect mock we just completed not too long ago. Like, all the guy's done is hit and hit some more in the minor leagues. And now he gets a chance to play, you know, probably pretty close to regularly with the Seattle Mariners, obviously Kelenic on the IL. So he'll probably get a good, some good run here down the stretch. And, you know, this is a guy that's hit over 300 each of the last three seasons. I think there's plus power here, and I think there's potential for, you know, a guy that could add, you know, maybe 5 to 10 steals. Hasn't really run much this year after stealing 19 and 15 the last 2 years, but I think there's a solid feel for hit. I think there's good power in the profile. The approach is pretty solid as well. He's kind of always stepped up that approach every year to the point where he had almost as many walks as strikeouts this year in the minors. So I'm definitely a fan of Dominic Canzone for sure.
Yeah, I think it was a solid get for them. He's been in the lineup, I think, both. I don't see if he's in the lineup tonight. He's been in the lineup both days, I'm pretty sure, since going over there. Yeah, in the lineup for the first three games since moving over there, which is certainly encouraging. He's played right field twice and left field once. I mean, he's a strong side platoon. I mean, they faced a righty in all three of those games. But that gets you plenty of plate appearances. And the fact that he's playing regularly is a pretty encouraging sign to me that he could potentially go on a run. I mean, he makes really good contact. He's got good power as well. So looking at this profile, I think that this was a strong move, probably for both sides. The Mariners traded out of depth in their bullpen, and they got some solid options. I mean, Rojas was no slouch last year. He's been hurt, you know, a lot of this year. So I'm not putting a ton of stock into it. And I'm not enamored with Rojas by any means. It's whatever. But I think Canzone's a bit of an underrated bat. And, you know, we've seen Ryan Bliss break out a bit. And while I don't fully buy into the power, he could be a decent little middle infield, you know, second baseman type, utility potential bat. But with Canzone, I mean, you're looking at strong contact, like 87% this year in the zone, 81% overall contact rate, you know, walking nearly as much as he struck out. So that was a big encouragement as well from him. And like you said, he gets the ball hard. We just need to see him lift it a little more and get to that power, because he's got above average EVs, 90-mile-an-hour average EV and 105-mile-an-hour ninth percentile. Like, those will play, 10% barrel rate. Just lift the ball a little more. And I think we could see some really solid results from Dominic Canzone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't even think he'll be limited long-term as like a platoon guy. I mean, he was not bad against lefties in the minor leagues. Like, he really wasn't. He was this year. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of power against them. He had one home run in 87 plate appearances this year against lefties, but he hit 274, the 379 OBP against them. So I think he's solid enough against lefties that he won't be, you know, strictly a platoon buddy. Yeah, he's much better against righties, absolutely. But yeah, I'm not like too concerned with him being strictly a strong side platoon bat moving forward. But with Bliss, though, Chris, that's rhyming here. Mm-hmm. But with Bliss, where do you think the power is? You know, you said you weren't really, you know, too much buying into the power, and I think that's where people are split. Like, you know, the speed is solid, you know, and he's run wild on the bases each of the last 2 years. Efficiency is, you know, not great, but it's okay. I think that looks like it's around like 75% or so. And, you know, contact skills, though, they, you know, didn't hit for average last year. That was something he was kind of lauded for back in, you know, when he was kind of coming up through the low minors after he was drafted in 2021. So not surprised to see him break out a little bit there. Not to 330. I don't think he's that type of hitter, but where do you think the power is going to end up, though? You think he's like, I don't know, like 12 to 15 home runs annually? Do you think that's fair for Ryan Bliss?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say 10 to 12 is comfortable. And so maybe topping out at 15 would be a pretty solid outcome. I mean, this is where looking at the box scores isn't helpful, because he's playing in the Texas League. The right. EVs just aren't there. The contact actually is probably not as good as you expect either. Running 74% contact, like that's not ideal by any means. So, you know, you look at this overall profile and it's kind of like, I'm not really sure what to ultimately make of it. And so he's fine. Like, I think he's probably fits the more of like a, you know, below average second baseman, like UT type bat. And I don't know. I was looking in like this Colton, like not this year's Colton Wong, but like, you know, the Colton Wong, like career average Colton Wong, like that seems kind of like the kind of player we're looking at here. So that's kind of where I'm at on him. He's fine. Like,
hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Everybody's going ballistic on him. I just haven't. It's just not there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention too. Like, while I like Bliss, you know, decent amount, I think he's a decent prospect, not a great prospect, but I don't think I like him as much as like the perceived value right now. And because obviously people look at the surface stats and they're obviously gaudy and that's great. But yeah, I actually would, even though I do think that it's not completely fluky, at the same time, just given where the perceived value is right now, I think I would lean more towards the sell, not like, you know, get him off your team or anything like that. But if you can go out and get a decent return for him, I wouldn't be opposed to moving him. But last thing on Bliss, though, when I was talking with Welsh on Prospect One, he mentioned to me that Tink Hentz mentioned to him that he asked him, who's the toughest hitter you face in the minors? And Tin Cans apparently immediately said Ryan Bliss. That kind of made me think, I'm like, all right, why? Yeah. You know, like,
yeah.
Again, you know, and this is a guy that faced Jordan Walker and plenty of other good hitters.
Right.
So it made me think, I'm like, all right, what made Tin Can say that? But again, yeah, solid prospect, but yeah, I think the perceived value has jumped pretty high on Ryan Bliss for sure. All right, the next one on the list, Thomas Seghese. Another, like, Bliss and Seghese are both, like, they almost cut from the same cloth this year. Like, two guys that are just putting up pretty impressive surface stats, but the underlying metrics don't wow you. You know, Seghese went over with Tekoa Roby to the St. Louis Cardinals for the Jordan Montgomery deal. Where are you at on Seghese? Is he kind of like in that similar mold for Ryan Bliss where, okay, maybe there's, and I think I wrote this up in my article for FTN, that I think I said something along the lines of, I could see Seghese being like a, you know, like a utility infielder, backup infielder type, but do I ever see a guy that's like an everyday regular that's an impact player? I don't think that player's there.
Yeah, it's a similar case, and I actually much prefer Ryan Bliss to Thomas Seghese. He doesn't impact the ball. He doesn't make a lot of contact. And again, it's another case where he's in the Texas League. Yeah, I get it. He's young for the level, but I don't know. This profile just doesn't do much for me because he's not great in the field either. He's played short, third, and second, but he's not good in the field. So he's going to be limited to second base most likely. And he's probably like a utility bench bat type. Like, I just don't see Thomas Seghese being a everyday second baseman. And I think the field of hit is a little over exaggerated. Like, you look at his batting averages throughout his career, but he hasn't ran contact numbers that resemble anywhere close to that. I mean, 74% contact rate this year is, I mean, it's fine. Like, it's
all right.
Yeah, I mean, like, AA average, I think, is like 72, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just going to look up the Texas League average because I'm curious now. The Texas League average this year is 72.6. So he's a little above average contact-wise, but not much. Like, it's nothing to be like, oh, man, like, this guy's a great contact hitter that's going to hit 330, like, or whatever. Right. He's hit 300 over 300 at nearly every stop. And I just don't see that out of him. But you look at the basic numbers, and it kind of suggests that. The interesting thing is, like, his contact rates haven't been much better in previous years either. So last year you look and he was at 76%, which is fine, taking a step back this year. Normally we don't see hitters increase their contact rate as they move up levels. So I see an average field of hit with a little bit below average power just based on the EVs. And so I'm just not really in on Thomas Seghese for fantasy. And I know a lot of people are, so I would cash out here. And I know I feel like I'm being like a negative Nancy this whole episode, but there's a lot of perceived values here that are just much higher than what everything kind of suggests. And so I think there's some potential trades that could happen that could really benefit you by just being able to cash out on these players.
Man, you're really being a critical Chris.
That's a good one.
I was thinking, there's got to be some word I can use to put with it your name. Like,
yeah.
Or wait, what would be better, critical Chris or critical Clegg? No, probably Chris. The CR sound on the beginning of each word. Yeah, that probably go critical Chris. But no, I'm right there with you though. I think Seghese's fine. I think he's a guy that probably has a major league career. But is he ever like the impact player for fantasy? Don't think I see that. But what about Tekoa Roby though? Going over kind of like, you know, everyone's talking about Seghese, but Roby, you know, again, surface stats have not been there for him. 4.64 ERA last year, 5.05 ERA this year. But you know, the stuff is decent. I want to see what he can kind of, maybe a change of scenery was needed for him and gets into a, you know, a decent St. Louis organization here. Maybe there's, you know, a buy low appeal with Roby, but what are your thoughts on him?
Oh, I love Roby. So like, I think Roby was honestly one of the better players to be traded at the deadline. His thing is just injuries. Like, he's got to stay healthy. He's been out since June the 3rd of this year. So got to stay healthy, got to stay on the mound. But TK Roby is really good. He increased his fastball velo this year. He was up to 97, sitting consistently around 95. His curveball is absolute hammer of a pitch, like easy plus or better pitch. And his other secondaries took steps up too this year in his slider and changeup. I'd say the slider is comfortably above average, and I think the changeup has become at least an average pitch. So you're looking at a pretty true four-pitch mix here with solid command. Like, Roby threw more strikes this year. He was walking less batters. And like I said, the stuff really took a step forward. But if you look at the 5.05 ERA and the 1.32 whip, you're probably just kind of like, what is this guy talking about? But again, pitching in the Texas League, we were talking about the Texas League hitters. Pitching in the Texas League isn't great either. And this is where he was pitching in Frisco, which is a hard place to pitch. So with Roby, I just firmly believe you're looking at somebody that could be a 20 to 23% K minus BB rate, because the command and the stuff both taking steps forward. And we saw him keeping the ball in the park more despite being in the Texas League. He was running a 350 BABIP and a 62% strand rate. Both the BABIP way, way, way above average of about 298. And the strand rate of 62 is well below, or I guess above, is bad for pitchers. So both those things suggest that he pitched a lot better than the ERA. His FIP was 384. I love the stuff with Roby. It's a starter frame, in my opinion. It's like definitely a back-end starter, but there's potential to be a mid-rotation starter here with TK Roby. He's 21 years old, still young. Yeah. I love the profile. So this is one that I do really like, and I think that the Cardinals came out really good here in the Jordan Montgomery deal because they got TK Roby, not because they got Thomas DeJacy.
Man, I got to get rid of that nickname. I'm not critical anymore here, but yeah, no, Roby's interesting for sure. And I think the perceived value on him just by going off of the surface stats alone is pretty low right now. Like, I think this is a guy that, depending on how deep your league is, you could probably just go out there and pick him off the waiver wire, or, you know, get him for dirt cheap. And yeah, that curveball is a thing of beauty. I've always had an appreciation for, like, just those hammer 12 to 6 curveballs like he has. Like, the first curveball, I said, a Pedro who actually didn't have a hammer, but the first curveball that, like, I really fell in love with as a kid, you know, more so a teenager, but Chris Carpenter's curveball from the Cardinals. Like, I loved his curveball. So I've always had that appreciation for kind of like the 12-6 hammer, and Roby absolutely has that. So yeah, he's definitely intriguing. Again, kind of a deep league flyer tip right now, but a guy that absolutely could rise up rankings here moving forward. The other three prospects going to St. Louis, this time via the Jack Flaherty deal: Cesar Prieto, Drew Rom, Zach Showalter. Let's start with Showalter, a guy that you were kind of pounding the drum on earlier this season. What are your thoughts on Showalter? I know you're high on him, but, you know, how high can Showalter climb? I guess that's my question for you. Where do you think he could, like, this time next year, Zach Showalter is a top blank prospect?
I think there's potential for him to be a top 100 pitching, or like top 100 overall prospect. I mean, the stuff's certainly there. He's been, you know, just really solid fastball. He's 93 to 95. I mean, it's a low release height. It's a excellent vertical approach angle with a lot of ride out of his hand. He's, I mean, we haven't seen a ton of him, and that's kind of the concern. He's only thrown like 30 innings as a pro, but he's already shown capabilities to move up rather quickly. He's in single A now. He started at the complex, pitched 10 innings, and he was out of there and moved up pretty quick. Yeah. The secondaries are going to be the sticking point. His changeup does have some nice arm side run and fade to it, and his slider has some good separation from it as well. They're just inconsistent, but with what I've seen with the stuff and the fastball plus his frame, like, there's a pretty projectable frame for a 19-year-old here at 6'2", 195 pounds. I think there's room for the fastball to sit 95 plus consistently. And with the kind of outlier characteristics it has, it's just a pretty special pitch. I think the fastball's plus, and I think there's potential for a plus slider and maybe an average to above average changeup as well. So Showalter, yeah, I don't know. Like, how does this move affect him? It'll be interesting. The command certainly will need to be improved as well. He'll need to throw more strikes. He's struggled with that a bit since he moved up to single A. And he's walked a few more batters, throwing just 60% strikes. which is a little below where you want to see. I want to see guys like a 63% strike threshold. So a little bit lower than I want to see as he's moved up to single A. But we'll see what St. Louis can do with him. I like the profile a lot, and I like the stuff. But I would say that there's still more questions here that need to be answered.
Yeah, I'm definitely right there with you. I like the stuff a lot. And you just mentioned, I don't need to go into it again. But yeah, I think if this is a guy that if he refines the command and control, I think he's going to be, you know, a guy that flies up rankings. He's already rising up rankings, but yeah, if he starts showing, you know, more refined command and control with that good stuff, you know, his ability to miss bats at a pretty high clip, yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of appeal here. So yeah, definitely want to see how St. Louis kind of handles him. And that's like the one thing, if you can criticize the Baltimore organization for one thing, it's, you know, the command and control department for pitchers. They haven't really, you know, obviously DL Hall, even Grayson Rodriguez, you know, hasn't had quite as good command and control as he had, you know, a year or two ago. So who's the other, Chase McDermott, who they got from Houston? Well, he already had command and control issues, but that's like the one area. So, you know, maybe getting Showalter into St. Louis, to me, they can find something there. So definitely very intrigued. So he's a guy, again, kind of depending on your league, you can either pick him up for free off the wire or just get him for pretty cheap. And but the potential, you know, return on investment here is pretty high. So definitely an ideal target. Drew Rom, I don't think, yeah, there's really any appeal there with him anymore. But Cesar Prieto is, you know, at least a little intriguing. He's another one of these guys that, you know, doesn't have a lot of, you know, categorical juice, so to speak. Like, I don't think he's got it, you know, hits for a lot of power or hits for, you know, steals a lot of bags. But I think there's a pretty solid hit tool here. A guy that could hit for a pretty good average long term, but what comes with the average, though, I think is the real question here. Like, he's hitting .349 this year, you know, but 6 home runs, 8 steals, 85 games. I don't think he's more than fringe average power and speed guy, but doesn't strike out. Like, this guy puts the ball in play. Only a 7.4% strikeout rate. Doesn't walk that much either. It's like, this guy's swinging, but the contact skills are pretty good. So I guess if you're looking for just like a guy that can give you a good average, he's your DI, but don't know where that power season might be like 10-10. I think that's kind of what we're looking at with Prieto here.
Yeah, I mean, he's just okay. Like, I'm not sure it's a big fantasy impact with Cesar Prieto. Like, Drew Rom is just, he's whatever. I mean, the deal got a lot sweeter when we saw Showalter in it, for me at least, because I like Showalter the most.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Rom has always been someone that people have talked about and I think wanted to be a thing, but I'm not really sure we'll ever see him get there. The fastball is just not good. And so that's kind of the concern. Like I said, Prieto has been rather interesting this year from just a numerical standpoint. As far as what he's done, I mean, not much power. I don't know what kind of speed he gets, because he's not going to, I mean, he's stolen as many bases as times as he's been caught. He's 7 steals, 7 caught stealings as well, which normally doesn't bode well for you when you move up to the majors. And his frame, I would say he's below average runner. So I wouldn't expect a ton of speed at all. The power, like you said, it's well below average as well. So yeah, maybe it's a plus field to hit, but a lot of grounders and yeah, just kind of meh, like profile for fantasy.
Is poor man's Luis Arraez a solid?
I don't even know if he has. Yeah, I don't even know if we can even go there because of the, you know, Arraez has other level contact skills.
And, right. Yeah. He doesn't have that, but yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah, it's kind of a boring profile. I mean, deeper league, sure, he could have some appeal because he'll probably hit for a decent average, but yeah, I don't see a lot of impact there and not a lot of upside with Prieto. He's fine. He's a guy that's kind of camped out in like my 300 range, my prospect rankings, and it's probably where he stays for the most part moving forward. Next here, a couple of Miami prospects on the move in separate deals, but both going to the American League Central. Khalil Watson going to the Cleveland Guardians in the Josh Bell deal, and Jake Eder going to the White Sox in the Jake Berger deal pair. Jake's changing teams there. Berger, first off, I don't want to talk about Berger, but like, is Berger just a really weird fit for the Marlins?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, they're doing well, and, you know, got to give Kim on credit. She's done a phenomenal job, but it's just like, you look at that lineup, you're like, how is this working? Like, obviously their pitching is their strong suit, but like, their lineup has not been terrible. It looks like it should be bad overall, but it's working at least to a certain degree. But anyway, Jake Etter going over to the White Sox here. I mean, this is a guy, Chris, that was trending, you know, probably inside some top 100s before he had Tommy John. Then he had a fractured foot, shin, ankle. Oh, what did he have? Fractured a foot, right?
Yeah.
Something lower. I think it was foot that kind of caused an additional delay start of this season, but starting to show, you know, what all the, you know, the buzz was about, what all the hype was about with him before his injury, what made him a guy that was pushing, you know, top 100 again, or even inside, you know, top 100 of many people's rankings back then. I mean, this is a guy with, you know, a good fastball slider combination, solid changeup, and I think command and control is at least average, potential for above average, you know, good strike throwing ability. I mean, bat missing ability. I mean, I think this guy could be top 100 again pretty soon. Like, he's already moving way up my prospect rankings once again. He had a really good start the other day where he went 5 2/3, 10 Ks, only one run and one hit allowed. So yeah, Arrow definitely turning up here.
Yeah. He looked much better, as you mentioned, his last start. Still getting the feel for his pitches back.
Right.
He generated
that'll come. You can take the rest off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had 12 whiffs on his slider. It looked absolutely nasty. He's sitting 78 to 80 range. The fastball was up to 96, which was encouraging. Like, that was up from his previous starts. So you like to see that, but he did sit in the lower 90s. He's going to be 91 to 93. And, you know, you said he can get to 96, but hopefully we see that kind of consistently tick up just a little bit. And, you know, he's throwing the changeup as well. Not throwing it a ton, but I do like the field of pitch there. I just don't like the move for him to Chicago.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm, yeah.
It's nothing against him as a pitcher, but.
Yeah, everything against the White Sox, who have not shown really just in general, but especially on the pitching side, just haven't shown. I mean, would you even consider that they developed Dylan Cease? Because when they got him, he was in, double A, something like that. So maybe a little bit tail end of his development. But yeah, overall, that's just not an organization you look to like, oh, yeah, they got it figured out. Like, no, they don't. And we've seen that. And this org is in kind of defunct right now. Like, they're in a tough spot, even with all the young talent they have on that team. So yeah, don't like the move out of maybe one of the top three pitching development orgs over to the White Sox, but still like the arm. So be interesting to see how he looks moving forward and how they handle him there with the White Sox. And then Khalil Watson still, you know, I still hear a lot of rumors from, you know, evaluators that still like him a decent amount. I mean, obviously the minor league career of Khalil Watson has been, you know, underwhelming. I mean, power speed has still been pretty solid. You still hitting some home runs, still stealing some bags, but you know, and even the approach has not been terrible. It's not there's like a massive K rate or anything like that. Just has not been really making enough contact. The average has been very low for the most part. So I don't know. I think it's pretty split camp right now. And I don't even know how I want to feel about Khalil Watson. Like, part of me still wants to like be in on him. So, like, I know the upside's there, but the other part of me is like, there's a lot of red flags too with Watson. So I'm like really on the fence on him. I know it's not a great answer, but that's where I'm at on Khalil Watson right now. Like, he's like top 250, top like 200 for me right now. Like, I think 175 range. So I'm still somewhat in on him with that ranking, but I don't know. Where are you at on Watson at this point?
Yeah, he's tough. He hit a massive home run tonight, but
yeah,
you know, it's he's really tough because now there's been injuries, there's been off the field issues, and hopefully we've seen him mature a bit. You know, he's a young kid, so you know, they do dumb stuff sometimes, but hopefully the new org is a fresh start for him, and the swing is still as beautiful as ever. He's just been on a tear. Like, he was rehabbing at the complex before he got traded, and he was on a massive run there too. So those are things you like to see. But like I said, he's a really tough one to evaluate because I just have ultimately no clue what to make of him this point. But I think that he could be a decent buy. Like, I'm not opposed to trying to get him in some leagues if you want to, just to kind of see, you know, where it goes.
Yeah, no, I'm not opposed to that either. Like, you know, at this point, the perceived value, I think, has dropped a pretty decent amount to the point where I don't think he's even, you know, considered a, you know, top 250 guy by many people. So if that's the case, then yeah, absolutely, I'd try to go out just to see, you know, if he's able to correct some of the issues at the plate and if he's able to mature overall. And as I said, the, you know, still has some good power, speed, you know, upside in the profile there. So if the price is low enough, I'd absolutely would be looking to buy low and just see if it happens. And if it doesn't, you probably didn't give up a lot to get him. So it's kind of like a low risk move trying to buy low on Cleo Watson right now. But the last couple of players we're going to be talking about in this episode, going back to the White Sox here, getting Edgar Cairo and Kai Bush in the Lucas Giolito deal here. I think obviously Cairo is the more interesting prospect here. Now, the Bush has some intrigue as well, but you know, Cairo was trending up as being one of the top catching prospects in the game after last year, slash 312, 435, 530. In 513 games, all at low A in the California League, but that is, you know, arguably, along with the PCL, one of the more hitter-friendly leagues in all the minors. 35 doubles, 17 home runs, and 12 steals. This year, in 75 games, in double A, 245, 380, 325. So, you know, more walks and strikeouts. The approach is still very good. That has not gone anywhere. But the power has gone into hiding. He is not running at all anymore, any three attempts this year. And caught in two of them, you know, everything kind of offensively at the plate in terms of like impact with the bat has kind of, again, kind of gone into hiding a little bit. But I'm still, I don't know about you, Chris, but I'm still willing to buy low on Cairo. I don't think the 2022 showing was completely fluky. You know, it was a little bit aided because of the California League. You know, maybe you could say that, but the skills are definitely there. And I'm not sure where the heck the power's gone this year. I don't know. I know you can say what those the underlying metrics are there, see if they're still kind of in line with last year. But I'm more in the buy low camp than the, you know, he was a fluke camp, so to speak, right now.
I agree. I mean, switch hitting catcher, has a great feel for contact, good bat to ball skills. Like, I don't know. I really like this profile. He still had a lot of work to do behind the plate, but ultimately I think he's a lot better than he has shown this year. Again, I'm not sure if I like the move to, you know, I don't know. I feel like if you're a White Sox fan, I apologize, but it's, you know, it's a weird move. But I will say that, you know, immediately, like, he steps in a role where he could, you know, move through the system rather quickly. And again, he's a 20-year-old, just a young 20-year-old at that in double A. So, you know, he could be pushed rather aggressively if they want to and see what he's made of. So I would argue that he's a lot better than he's shown, you know, than he's shown this year. I mean, last year we saw what he did in single A. The power probably played up last year. I think he is probably a 10 to 12 home run bat, but there's much better contact skills than he has shown. And so ultimately for me, like, I think that I would buy low on him if you're looking for a catcher in Dynasty. I mean, his contact rates are extremely strong this year, running, you know, 86.5% contact. That's really solid across the board. So I'd be thrilled with that.
Yeah. I still think that he potentially could turn into what we kind of hoped, like, Keibert Ruiz was going to turn into, or but we're still hoping that Gabriel Moreno turns into. Like, I still think there's a pretty solid, you know, overall offensive player here. But yeah, I think obviously limited because power isn't going to be massive. And if he's not going to be running as he was in the low minors, which I didn't ever thought this would be a huge part of his game anyway. But like I said, I think he's going to be a solid major league player. You know, not an impact, not like a top 10 fantasy catcher or anything like that. But you know, maybe a guy that, you know, in your two catcher formats, a guy that could be a solid, you know, second catcher. I think that's kind of what we're looking at with Cairo, but definitely would be looking to buy low as well. But I think this is going to wrap it up. There are some more other minor prospects that are moved, but we kind of wanted to talk about these guys that are kind of impactful and intriguing for fantasy purposes right now. So that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, and join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.